What's the Godfather got on it? Salami? Prosciutto? Capicola? Yeah, yeah. Provolone? Lettuce, tomato, deli mustard. No onion. Because kissing. Do they have sourdough? Cool. Barbecue chips. Mountain Dew if they have it. Otherwise, Coke. From TCI, this is Enter the Deuce, and I am your host, Patrick Brady. This week's show looks at why, when friends offered to help, I simply froze. As a kid, I tended not to ask for help until it was too late, if I asked at all. My gut tells me that when you are a functioning adult, accepting charity is like 40 lashes to the ego. I don't think anyone really enjoys checking their pride. Even now, accepting help from friends isn't easy. NICU, day 11. How can we help? I live in a world with little certainty, but plenty of answers. The number of things I know with certainty, I can count on one, maybe two hands. Beyond the love of family, my life has taught me that nearly everything is up for grabs. From where I live to how I earn my living, any of that can change, and sometimes as quickly as a snowflake melts. A pilot friend of mine likes to say that such a view of the world teaches you situational awareness. Answers change from day to day, moment to moment. Knowing that Matthew's condition yesterday may not be his condition today or tomorrow may mean less certitude, less assurance for me, but it means I'm less surprised by changes. In my life, that outlook leaves me feeling calmer, perhaps because I think I've got a better handle on reality that way. Some of the answers the doctors give us aren't what we'd expect. Sometimes they are better. But I try not to make the mistake of assuming that any improvement he notches indicates some permanent linear path of growth. There is no way he is just going to improve and improve and improve. That's not how the world works. I mean, that sort of thinking leads to real estate bubbles. And though there are plenty of answers to even the most mundane questions in my life, I've been presented with one question to which I simply do not have a response. And that question is, what can we do for you? I've received texts, emails, notes on Facebook, and phone calls from family to friends and even acquaintances. People have reached out with generous offers to ease what we're going through. I see this as a demonstration of the idea that it really does take a village to raise a child. This is a community coming together in the kindest way possible. Just one problem. I have no idea how to respond. When I try to think of some specific response, I become overwhelmed almost instantly. Cooking for us? Ugh, what do I ask for? And my wife and I are both picky eaters. It seems selfish to the point of abusive to start specifying anything more than asking for, I don't know, chicken. We've got a mountain of laundry and I could use help with that. But that means letting someone into our home, which looks like a wreck because we aren't there much, which is why we have a mountain of laundry. We're always at the hospital. The snake eats its tail, doesn't it? Philip wants more time at the park. I don't blame him. And while I have empty nester friends who miss little kids and wouldn't mind babysitting for an afternoon or an evening, I feel guilty not taking him myself. After all, that is my job. So, no, I have no idea what to ask for. Roughly 6 months before my son was born, I crashed coming down one of the canyon roads in Malibu. I was past all the truly hairy, steep pitches, but slid my rear tire on some paint at the apex of a turn. I was able to steer into the slide and keep my bike upright. But I decided it would be best to simply run off the road, stop, and then walk back to the road. As it turns out, I was wrong. And when my bike left the road, it stopped dead. And I ended up crashing face first into dirt. The plastic surgeon who worked on my face said the crash should have killed me. I share this because in the wake of that crash, friends asked what I might need. I didn't know how to answer, in part because the thought of anyone seeing me horrified me. I didn't even want to see me. My medical bills were significant, more than I could hope to put on credit cards. I wasn't sure how I'd pay them. Two friends of mine set up a PayPal account and then solicited donations for what they called the beer fund. Essentially, buy a guy a virtual beer for $5. They reasoned that I had given readers enough enjoyment that buying me a beer was a fair way to say thank you, and to do it in the wake of my crash would be a very helpful gesture. But honestly, I could never have set such a thing up myself. I couldn't ask for that kind of help. That it wasn't my idea made it easier to accept. There's an odd dynamic at work in crisis. I can say this is true for me, but I suspect it is also true for a great many people. When the glue melts, very few of us are against assistance. What is far more challenging is articulating what we need. Certainly, I have seen friends who can marshal the forces and get their house cleaned, the fridge filled, and the laundry mastered. But there are those of us for whom naming a need has a difficult twofold effect. In cycling, rendering aid is easy to do. If a rider is falling off the pace, you pull ahead, giving them your draft, and you close the gap. If a rider crashes, you render first aid. If the pace is meant to be hard, but the output drops, the speed slows, you go to the front for one more pull. If your friend's bottles are empty, you share yours. None of this requires a request or even a response. This is the unwritten etiquette of the peloton. I don't mind admitting that cycling taught me these lessons in concrete ways, that prior to cycling, I'd been too much of a lone wolf to really understand the social contract. If only real life were as easy. Putting a name to what you need means acknowledging that your stuff is not under control. That's tough to verbalize because it requires vulnerability. Implicit in naming that need is a kind of request as well. Even if the help was offered, where things go wrong for the helpee is that by naming something specific, it feels as if we've asked for something. And again, that means making ourselves vulnerable. The real trouble is that I've already acknowledged more vulnerability than I'd prefer. I've admitted to thousands upon thousands of people that I'm terrified my son might die, that even if he doesn't die, that he might be in for the ultimate unmaintained road to good health. Isn't that enough? To ask for help is to drop yet another rung down the ladder. Matthew is frightfully fragile. When we're in the NICU, hand sanitizer punctuates each interaction. Take a picture, hand sanitizer. Touch your hair, hand sanitizer. Type an email, hand sanitizer. I look around at the other babies in his pod, and they are all preemies, beings of such frail composition that they don't yet look fully human. As to that phrase, when we're in the NICU, well, it's taken on a more conditional flavor. Our other son, Philip, had a runny nose for half an hour or so on Sunday afternoon, and now Shauna, her mother, and I all have some virus that prevents us from visiting Matthew. It's not just not visiting Matthew, either. It's that we accept that to step foot into the NICU while sick would put every child, every doctor, every nurse, and every staff member, not to mention every other parent there, at risk. I love my son, and I want to see him. But going to the hospital is a level of selfish that's just unconscionable. Each day of not seeing Matthew is excruciating. Never have I loved anything so new with such abandon, college girlfriends included. Of all the qualities I admire in other people, grace is the one that most consistently leaves me in awe. I think that's due to how slow I am to recognize it. Grace is a gentleness of the soul, an effortlessness of self that makes interacting with some people a kind of endless joy. Those are people who make me feel better about being me. It's the rarest of gifts. I think that if I had their grace, I would know how to accept help in a way that gave me what I most need while allowing them the opportunity to show some love. And that's what this is about. The offer of help is just a matter of people showing that they care. They want the chance to stand up and be counted. Helping out new parents, is part of the brotherhood into which all parents have been initiated. Not to answer is a kind of no, and declining the offer of help is tantamount to telling someone that you don't respect their path as a parent. To find that I'd done that, even accidentally, would be as painful as insulting my mother. Recently, some friends said, "Here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring you lunch on Saturday. What would you like?" It turns out that was easier to answer. We were given a few choices of sandwiches, flavors of chips. Did we want pickles? What do you want to drink? I offer this as a kind of apology for all those who have reached out with an offer of assistance. I'm not unwilling to accept aid, but articulating a need is like talking about the future when all the verbs you have are present tense. If you will, allow me to breathe some life into a dog-eared cliche. It's not you, it's me. In our next installment, I look at the Deuce's physical predicament, what his life is like in the isolette and on a ventilator. Enter the Deuce is a production of the Cycling Independent. Our motto is, if you ride bikes, you're one of us. Find us on the web at cyclingindependent.com or on Facebook at The Cycling Independent. And if you are a cyclist, please be sure to check out our other podcasts, The Paceline, which I co-host with John Lewis, and Revolting, hosted by John Lewis and Steve Knievel of All Hail the Black Market. If you like this independent production and want to show your support, you can stop by The Cycling Independent and subscribe or make a one-time donation. There is a link in our show notes.